Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our fascinating visit with a pretty fascinating man, 95-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor Delton Wally Walling, a man of many talents. For example, he just reeled in a 75-pound octopus off the Northern California coast a few weeks ago. And he's also a man who carries haunting memories of December 7th, 1941, not to mention the rest of the war. For 14 hours before, during, and after the Japanese attack, he was in a 180-foot observation tower witnessing on a broad scale the devastation of that day, which has indeed lived in infamy. Wally has taken us on quite a journey so far, but I want to make sure that we don't miss out on some of those things that really only he can describe for us. What are some of the things you saw from that tower that most people have never seen? I mean, besides the battleships exploding, you're seeing aerial combat too? You're seeing planes getting shot down?
I never ever saw a Japanese plane shot down. I saw some smoking, but I could not follow out. Did they crash it or what? But I saw them smoking.
And how close did they fly to your tower?
150 feet.
That's pretty close.
Right there. I'm looking right at them. Uh-huh. When they got the canopy shoved back when they're sinking to California, and they're coming right through about 50 feet right down there, right? You can look right into their plane because they got such a short distance to get over the Helena and get that torpedo in to hit the California. See, that's just a short distance across there. And so they've got to get low in over the buildings there, workshops, and drop their torpedo right beyond Helena to get into the California. So we're looking at, but they're looking straight ahead. They're not looking at nothing because they got to concentrate on that little short distance that they got.
And if you guys had had guns where you were, you could have shot them down.
Yeah.
But you're just sitting there observing, watching the show.
Yeah. In my time in the Navy, I never had a gun on my hip, even on the ship.
But they're flying past you. They could have shot your tower. They could have shot you guys.
Had they known that that was the Admiral's communication tower, I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Good thing they didn't know. But you guys did have some rounds come pretty close to your tower from your own ships, right?
Yeah. The Helena, right there.
Uh-huh. You were just talking about the Helena. So the Helena's trying to shoot the planes down, and they almost shoot you guys in the tower.
Yeah.
How close do you think those rounds came?
Well, if it wasn't for that stack there, they'd have probably hit the tower.
Mm-hmm.
Same line right up across there. You could hear the bullets going by the tower.
Uh-huh. And I know we're bouncing around, but just here recently, you met a gentleman who lives less than an hour away from you, who was on the Helena and was one of those guys firing those shots.
Right.
So what'd you tell him?
Well, they just notified the ship that you might shoot us off if you keep it up.
Uh-huh.
So change your line of fire. But shortly afterwards, they got hit with the torpedoes and was taken away anyway.
Yeah, so much damage. And one of the other jobs that you had there in the tower, as I understand it, was trying to spot bodies in the harbor?
No, every morning.
The next days that followed?
Every morning there'd be bodies come up. And we're the only one that can see the whole water area. Mm-hmm. And so we would notify the barges that are picking up the people. And they would go, they just put a line on them and drag them to the landing, and then it was taken out on the structures and taken away.
So you're up there with binoculars or something, scanning
the
harbor?
We got the big scopes.
Yeah.
We can see everything.
What a morbid job.
Well, somebody had to do it. I mean, it was just something that come along. It was just, you never thought anything about it.
And I guess that's one of my questions, since so few people ever saw what you saw from that vantage point. And you talked about some of the different explosions, but the aftermath. Once all the planes were gone, and you don't know, like you say, if there's a land invasion coming, that rumor's out there. There's all kinds of things, I'm sure, that are going through your mind. But after the Japanese forces are gone and you're looking at what's left, can you describe that scene for us?
When I'm looking at that's left, immediately what goes in through your mind? Are we going to be able to defeat the Japanese? Because now we've seen how strong they are. Mm-hmm. Just a portion of what they got in the Pacific. See, they haven't even got their Asiatic fleet here.
When you're up there in that tower, that morning of December 7th, the planes are gone, the Arizona's still smoldering, the Utah and the Oklahoma are upside down, there's oil throughout the harbor, there's carnage. What was the thing that you saw that still sticks with you when you picture that scene in your mind? What do you see?
That scene of all that oil in the water, the men that was blew off into the water and trying to swim out.
You could see them struggling in the water.
Oh, sure. Just a few hundred yards away. It was a terrible scene. You couldn't hardly watch it.
Do you think that could have been me?
You're damn right. It could have been me.
Do you wonder, are those some of my buddies out there?
Certainly. And there was. Mm. See, 32 was lost off the Pennsylvania.
Right, so your ship...
Herbie. Look what Uncle Herbie had. Yeah. Look what happened to him there.
Uncle Herbie is Herb Weatherwax, who's been interviewed on this program before. I met him out there at the Arizona Memorial. And he's going to be with you there this December 7th for the 75th anniversary. He's got you beat. You're only 95 and he's 99, huh? And he was on the Pennsylvania that morning?
He was on the Pennsylvania.
So you guys were part of that crew together, but you weren't on the ship because you're up in the tower.
See, on a big ship like that, you don't even know the people in the next division.
But, so your ship's in dry dock, but it got hit, and 32 from the Pennsylvania were killed.
Right.
And you knew some of those guys?
Well, certainly.
How often do you think about that?
You never forget it. You never. You see, after World War II, I was 80% disabled. I was out there 5 years and 2 months without coming home.
5 years and 2 months, never a trip home.
Now, you can carry on with your job and your life, but there is no way that you can't stop the nightmares. What comes on us at night, you can't get rid of. There's no way.
And I know sometimes talking about it makes it even more painful, so I respect that, and I don't expect you to share anything that you don't feel you can. But what are those things that come back to you? What are the nightmares?
The tragedy, the explosions, stuff like that will pop up, see? Mm-hmm.
So 3 weeks, you're up there in that tower trying to find stuff that's
every
popping
day.
To the surface.
Every day. First thing in the morning when it got daylight, then we'd look the harbor over.
So across the country, this had quite an effect. This got people's attention. People were inspired to do something. Guys were signing up all over the place. But what did you see on Oahu in the wake of that attack as far as morale, resolve, determination? Did guys just want to go over and destroy the Japanese? How can you describe that atmosphere?
Well, everybody, after the raid was over, everybody wants to go after the Japanese. We don't know how we're going to do it.
Right.
But everybody wants to get on their back.
Mm-hmm.
And the morale right afterwards is bad because we don't have any equipment. We don't have nothing. How are we going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how inspired the people were of the United States to get in and everybody get in the act and get this problem solved and done.
And you mean everybody.
And I mean everybody.
Men, women, and children.
Yep.
And something you mentioned earlier, you said, you know, rumors of landings being made, a land invasion. Is that something that persisted for a few days or weeks that people were still concerned?
The next day, nothing has happened, so we know. And then we start to put it all together. We know the Japanese are gone because you can't find them.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're gone.
Are there some things, and again, you go to Pearl Harbor every year, and you sit there and you talk to people who are visiting and you give them a firsthand perspective on what happened that day. Are there some things that you saw or became aware of that day and the days that followed that were, because we hear all about the tragedy and the devastation. Are there some things you heard about that told you, here's a silver lining or here's an act of heroism within this or here's something that lives were saved? Evidence of things could have been a whole lot worse if this and this and this didn't happen.
Well, I've told you a little about our pilots, and if they had been there, they'd have been destroyed.
Right.
So we saved all them.
Sure.
So we got a jump start there.
What about, for instance, one of the gentlemen that I've interviewed, he's passed since, but he was on the Oklahoma, and he was one of those guys who was trapped inside the hull of the Oklahoma and then was freed when they finally welded through it and
got him out.
Is that something that you guys heard about at the time?
Oh, no, we could watch down. We was looking right down maybe 400 yards, looking right down on the Oklahoma when they're working on it.
So you see these guys.
We saw them, but we don't know what they're doing. you know.
You have no idea there's guys trapped inside there still
alive.
Oh, yeah,
we know they're in there. We can figure that out because they're trying to cut holes in there.
Yeah.
See? So we can see all that, but we're not right down there with them. We really don't know how they're doing it or what, but we know that they're doing it, see?
I would imagine from an emotional perspective, when you find out about something like that, when there's been so much tragedy and now you find out, hey, some guys who probably should have been dead are actually alive, that is some kind of encouragement or boost to your sales?
Oh, certainly. When they finally cut it open, you know, to get the guys out of the air tank, then a tank down in there that they had been down in there cleaning, it really hit hard when they found that there was 20-some in one compartment down there that they didn't get to, you know, and they died. And as they succumbed, they wrote on the wall in the darkness, you know, the messages on the wall to their loved ones and stuff. I never ever saw that, but I heard of it. You know, it's bad.
And I want to hear about what you did the rest of the war, because, I mean, this is one day that changed the world, but you were involved in the response and a whole lot of things the rest of the war, and I want to talk about that. But while we're on the subject of Pearl Harbor, you are going to be there for the 75th anniversary.
Right.
And every year we wonder how many survivors are going to be there next year.
Well, you see, 3 years ago, we thought that we could only have about 25 or 30 that ever show up. But some airlines or somebody in the United States brought over 200.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big dinner at the Hilton. That's when we stopped the Pearl Harbor Association.
Right.
That was the end of it.
Well, and many people look at the 75th anniversary and say,
it's the last.
This will be the last deal.
It'll be the last. And so I'm just doing the best I can to hold together to make this last trip.
And what do you do when you go there?
There's my desk.
You set up a desk at the Arizona Memorial Visitor Center.
They have it all set up for me.
Yep.
The other boys come over Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, only about 3 hours. That's all you can stand at our age.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got 100 people waiting to come through, and you can't write anymore.
So they want autographs.
They
want to talk to you.
Yeah, but we cannot talk to them. We all just give them a bio, the story.
Yeah.
That's the best we can do because you can't hold up that line.
There's always a line of people that want to talk to you.
What I give them is a short story on me and the damage that was done at Pearl Harbor. That's what I give them.
You have done that. You've taken photos and signed autographs and shaken the hands of thousands and thousands of people there.
Thousands.
Why do you do that? Why is that important to you?
I want the story told. I want the true story told.
Well, I'm thankful you've been sharing that with us today the way that only you can, and I don't think I'm the only one that wants to hear some more. So we're going to continue this on our next episode. We focused mainly on the first day of the war for America, but Wally was in the Pacific for the rest of the war, too. And we're going to hear some of those adventures and close calls next time. In the meantime, I'd love for you to pull up hometownheroesradio.com and click on the link that I have for you there to Friends and Neighbors magazine and a great article about Wally by Chase Anderson, who has done tremendous work documenting veteran stories in California's gold country. Chase has introduced Wally to another Pearl Harbor survivor in the area. They'll both be there on Oahu for the 75th anniversary on December 7th, Lord willing, and I hope you'll be here next time to hear the rest of this indefatigable 95-year-old story. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.